Hello, I'm Pauline Jennings, and this is Musician Talk. Well, it's terrific to be back. I took a couple months hiatus, during which Wendy was kind enough to play shows from the Musician Talk archive. Thank you, Wendy. Today is a brand new show, and I'd add a drum roll here if I were editing like I used to, but that is the point. I am no longer conducting the interviews via Zoom. Editing them and sending them to Wendy to play. No. I am live now, and my guest today, Ron Rodman, brave man, is here to take the dive with me into my first inaugural live episode. Ron is a professor and director at Carleton. He directs the Carleton Symphony Band, and he's a trombone player, and he's from Northfield. He's been at Carleton for 31 years, and he's sitting right here. So let's get the scoop from him, and let's talk with Ron Rodman. Hi, Ron.
Hi, Pauline. Thanks for having me this morning. It's great to be here.
Well, thank you for coming in. I really appreciate it. Thanks for being my guinea pig. Appreciate that.
No problem, as the kids would say.
Oh, nice. I like that. So it's Thanksgiving week. Do you have any plans?
Yeah, we'll go back to see my mother and sister in Indianapolis, Indiana. It's my hometown. So we'll go back there for a few days.
Nice.
My poor mother's 93 years old, wow. But still going strong. So we'll have a nice visit. A nice family visit, I think. So
that is terrific. I am heading to Vegas. To gamble so much, but to visit some friends and look at the beauty out there. Okay, we'll do some bad gambling too, I'm sure, but I'm looking forward to that. So Ron, let's dig right in, and we'll talk about your work at Carleton here coming up a little later, but I want to start with your early musical career, in quotes, when you first started getting interested in music, when you first started taking lessons, and then just give me the journey. Talk me through your musical journey up to college, maybe a little bit past that.
Okay. Well, all right. Good. Yeah, great. I grew up on the south side of Indianapolis, Indiana, part of the baby boom generation, you know, so there's a huge high school on the south side there. And my mother was a very good singer. My dad was a trumpet player. Neither one was a professional musician, but they enjoyed music. I still see images of my mother with her hands in the dishwater singing Broadway show tunes at the top of her lungs, you know, so it's pretty funny. And my dad was the first person in the neighborhood to buy a hi-fi. This was even before stereo, and he had a lot of records, LP records, and so we listened to that. So we were always sort of surrounded by music. And I started taking piano lessons when I was first grade, and kind of on and off. And then fifth grade, like a lot of elementary school kids, started a band instrument, which was trombone, and stuck with it ever since. And so we were getting through junior high, and I was lucky enough to have friends who were interested in music and my fellow bandmates and that sort of thing. And we always started to have little bands, little offshoot bands, little jazz groups, or, of course, Tijuana Brass was popular at that time. This is the late 60s, so we had a little Tijuana Brass jazz group. I think there are two trumpets, me on trombone, a guitar player, and a drummer, and that was it, you know. So, but that sort of morphed in high school. I continued playing in high school, and that morphed into a sort of a what became a cover band for some of the big horn groups at the time in the 70s. This was Chicago. We would play Chicago. We played Blood, Sweat, and Tears, Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Oh, wonderful.
A group called Rastus, which was out of Detroit. We liked some of their stuff. And time we were in college, this became sort of a big deal. We were a group called Malachi, and I joined the union and had an agent and played bookings throughout the Midwest, I think, just about every weekend. So this helped me get through college financially, first of all, and also made me a really good player too. I mean, I played a lot, had the horn in my face for, you know, long periods of time. So it was really great. Went to Indiana University School of Music, and I guess I'll back up, and also in high school, enjoyed going to concerts, not just rock concert, but the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra, too. And I think what really hit home to me was this one piece, which is kind of odd. It's an odd piece to be inspired by, but this was the Symphonic Metamorphosis by Paul Hindemith, a German composer, the early to mid-20th century. And great orchestration, interesting harmonic progressions, good brass writing, and this is when I said I want to be a symphonic trombonist. going to IU, audition, got in the school, and found out there were 75 other trombonists there who also wanted to be symphonic trombonists. So I had to change career plans just a little bit. I mean, I did well at school. I was nominated for a performer certificate and all that sort of thing.
But congrats.
But I got a music ed degree instead of a performance degree as insurance, you know. So,
yep.
So that was it turned out really well because my first job after that was as a high school band director at a large private school just outside of Atlanta, Georgia. So. So I can go into that a little more later. But experience at Indiana was really great. I had, even though I was on a music ed degree, I still was able to study with some really great teachers. Keith Brown was my main teacher, former trombonist with the Philadelphia Orchestra, New York Metropolitan Opera Orchestra, studied with Edwin Anderson, bass trombone teacher, who was retired from the Cleveland Orchestra, studied wow. tuba with Harvey Phillips, who was the New York Philharmonic, just a fabulous, probably the number one pedagogue for tuba in the country.
Wow.
Just a wonderful guy, too. So it was a good experience all the way around at Indiana. So
sounds like you had some great teachers, some great mentors, and boy, is that important. I want to take you back a little bit. So you were playing with a group in middle school.
Yeah.
Chicago Tunes and Blood, Sweat, and Tears. And
well, this was high school and into college.
Okay.
Mostly. Yeah, that was we got started with the Tijuana Brass stuff. But
that's
then,
right.
But then we morphed into this sort of more progressive jazz / rock fusion group. You know,
slash a lot more complicated music.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Right. And I love that music. It's some of my favorite stuff.
Yeah.
So did you have the singers and everything, or was it instrumental?
Yeah, we had the whole, it was a Chicago wannabe group. We had, I was the trombonist. We had a trumpeter and a sax player. We had a lead singer. We had a keyboard guy, a bass and lead guitar player, and a drum. So it was the whole
shebang.
Yeah.
Nice. And so you played the region. You went
all over the place. We played mostly in Indiana, but in Illinois, up in Michigan, Ohio. You know, that sort of thing.
That's
so
great.
That was cool.
In the '70s.
Yeah, it was in the '70s.
So that was. Let's see. Bands are getting paid the same now as in the '70s.
Pretty
so.
Much. Pretty much. I'm afraid that's right.
Very very sad.
Yeah.
So you decided to get a music ed degree instead of a performance degree, which from the people that I have interviewed anyway, it seems like that's a really good fallback because you already were performing. You
already kind of, and you're getting the lessons, and so
you can always do that. And the music ed degree seemed to have treated you well with being a teacher and going into that. Thank you for that synopsis. Very tight synopsis. We'll get back to some other things, but I want to turn to the first song called Pagan. And this is written by James Gillette. And I want you to set that up for me.
Well, when I came to Carleton in 1991, of course, as a band director, that's part of my responsibilities. I was digging around in the band library, their instrumental library downstairs, and I came across all this these pieces by James Gillette, and they were mostly transcriptions of Bach organ pieces, of all things, and a few little tone poems. But then I've noticed there was three symphonies by Gillette, and I was going, what the heck are these, and who is this guy? Well, it turns out he was he was hired at Carleton, so this is a nice little bit of Northfield and Carleton history here. He was hired as an organist for Carleton College in 1921, and he came to campus. And the story goes he was asked to start a band. And as an organist, he wasn't really a brass band, marching band type guy. He had a sort of idea of a band being more of a symphonic, like an orchestra. So he actually created the Northfield or the Carleton Symphony Band and was not satisfied with a lot of the band literature at the time. So he took it upon himself either to transcribe music from other sources or compose music himself. So he composed these three symphonies. These were the first symphonies for wind instruments by a American composer. So it's quite significant in the band world.
Wow.
And as a result, he got generated a lot of interest. And long story short, I mean, the band grew and grew throughout the 1920s and 30s. They toured all over the country. They became kind of famous because they played at the National Bandmasters Convention in 1933 and played this piece, this Pagan Symphony. And this is his first symphony that he composed. It's called Pagan, not to be derogatory towards any religion, but he was thinking more in terms of prehistoric times, you know, where it was his sure. idea here. But what you're going to hear is the last movement of this first symphony for a wind group by an American composer. So.
That is fascinating, and the connection to Northfield is really cool.
It really is very, very interesting. So I was captivated by these pieces. Stylistically, they're interesting. There's just a little bit of Gershwin there, a little bit of Debussy there, I wouldn't say it's great music, but it's really interesting how musicians thought about music in the 1920s and 30s, I think, particularly here in the Midwest. So I think it's a very interesting piece.
So for those of people out there and me, when you say Gershwin stuff and Debussy stuff, what do you mean by that?
Yeah, just some of the harmonies, the way the harmonies, some of them are kind of quasi-jazzy a little bit, and they sort of have this sort of impressionistic feel to it somewhat, and so that's kind of what I mean. It's not like Beethoven or heavy-handed Wagner or something like that, but it's just very pleasant to listen
more
to.
More poppy.
Yeah, kind of, lighter, but not real, not exactly poppy.
Got
so
it.
there's a little pretense there that we want to be. This is a great piece.
Exactly. Before we get to the piece, I want you to describe to me what the difference is between a symphony band and a band, or a symphony band and a symphony.
Yeah, the name is unique to Carleton's. When I got here, it was the Symphonic Wind Ensemble, which was a lot of groups are called that. But Gillette's name was Gillette's name was Symphony Band. So I decided, well, in honor of Gillette, we're gonna rename the band the Carleton Symphony Band again. So his idea was like a symphony orchestra, and in fact, his instrumentation was a little different than a brass band or a military band at the time. He had cellos, he had harps, he had a full complement of saxophones, all the way from soprano to bass. So his instrumentation is a little odd, and I think when you listen to the piece, you'll hear that he thought of the clarinets as sort of the violin section of the band.
Oh, cool.
So there, it's a little screechy because I think the clarinets, the conception of sound with the clarinets back then was a little different than it is now. So it may be kind of gone, ooh, what's that, you know, but that's kind of the difference, I think.
Got it. Yeah. Okay. Well, then let's go ahead and take a listen. Let's take a listen to a portion of Pagan, the final movement of James Gillette's Symphony No. 1. My guest today, Ron Rodman, made a CD with Carleton Symphony Band that includes this piece.
Thank you.
This is Pauline Jennings, and you're listening to Musician Talk. Today, my guest is Ron Rodman, music professor and symphony band director at Carleton. And you just listened to Pagan, which is a part of a piece from the James Gillette Symphony No. 1. And I want to know more about this. Okay, so it's from a symphony that from a CD that you made. And how did that come about? This was in 1995.
Yeah, well, that's a long time ago. And like I was saying, this is one of the steps of getting tenure at Carleton. I've discovered these scores to these three symphonies, and I transcribed them for modern band and copied parts and so forth. And I thought, well, what's the next step to do this? Have the band perform them, at which we did. But I also wanted, well, let's make a CD.
Yeah.
And so it was nice enough. I had the temerity to march myself into the president's office of Carleton, who was Stephen Lewis at the time, and say, I want to make a CD of old Carleton band music. And, and Steve was a great, he's a great president, great leader, a very nice man, too. And but he's an economist, so he loved the arts, but he was also an economist, so he was kind of thinking, well, what can we do with this, you know, to sort of monetize this?
Right.
Well, we can make these CDs and give them to alumni donors and that sort of thing.
Yeah, yes. You know,
so, but anyway, it got done, and we helped fund the pressing of the CDs, the cover art, and so forth. So it was the rest is history. So. We had a sort of cache of CDs. I've given them out to at various band music conferences and that sort of thing, just sort of spread the word a little bit. So
it's way easier to get rid of CDs when you're giving them away.
that's right.
That's
very true.
I have hundreds.
I still have some. If anybody out there wants any.
Steve and I both have hundreds in our attic of different projects that we've worked on. So I think we started giving ours away, too.
Right.
So that's really interesting, and that got you tenure. Congratulations.
Yeah. Well,
that's one part of it, of course. And to have the temerity, you said, you know, that conquering your fear thing, just if you just do it like today,
right.
Just getting in the studio and doing it live, even though I was very nervous.
Exactly. Right.
And then it's under your belt and you got it done. So, so let's talk about your job right now. Mm-hmm. You're working at Carleton. You direct the symphony band and you teach music.
Mm-hmm.
There.
Right.
So why don't you just tell us a little bit about that, or if there's something between college that you're talking about and now that you
I'm kind of a jack of all trades at Carleton. After my first job, in Atlanta, I got my master's degree in music theory, actually, at Georgia State University. Then I taught at a small college in North Carolina for a while. Went back to Indiana and got my PhD in music theory, actually, at there, and enjoyed taking trombone lessons again with the same faculty that I had before.
Nice.
Came up to Northfield in '91, and probably am here because I'm both a theorist that is can teach in the classroom and I had band directing experience and so forth. So that's basically why I'm here, I think. So that's what they wanted at the time. So so what I do at Carleton is, yes, I do direct the symphony band. I have taught low brass up until last year. I'm sort of phasing to retirement now, so I'm easing up on some of my workload. But I still do teach the music theory classes, and I developed an interest in film music scholarship and electronic media scholarship too. So I have authored a book on television music, actually, and that's my current project. I'm working on. I'm co-editing a book on television music, and we'll probably write another one here in the near future.
Okay, that's really fascinating, and that could be a whole other show to talk about that one.
Yeah.
It's not published yet?
No, it's not.
And
well, in fact, I just finished co-editing a book on music and advertising, actually. So so that's out now.
But, oh, and that was that'd be fascinating too. So I'd love to have you back and to talk about those. I mean, each one has its own just loads of information that we don't talk about or that you don't know about.
Right. So, well, this was interesting because this was my graduate school and my sort of my mentor in music theory was, I remember him standing up in front of a music analysis class and says, you know, we should really talk about film music and do some study on film music. And I was going, what? Film music? Are you kidding? But he sort of led the way, and I followed, and it is a very interesting topic, and now it's a burgeoning area of scholarship for.
Well, we could just talk about the Star Wars score and Lord of the Rings score and I'd be happy.
So that's true.
I love
that's
that.
True.
What it's, incredible music.
Yeah, it really is. So
let's turn gears a little bit, stay with the teaching side of things, and I want to talk a little bit about the importance of music, and part of the reason I do this is to talk about music and teach people about the different areas of music that they don't know about and why it's so important to have the arts and for this show particularly, music. So can you speak to that?
Well, yeah, sure. I want to go back to talking about, you know, when I was a kid and at Indiana. And, I better fall back on music education. And at the time, I just wanted to play, you know. And I think a lot of musicians feel that way. But the older you get, the more valuable you see this. Getting the music ed degree was probably a pretty good idea, not just from a job security standpoint, but from imparting music to the next generation.
Yes.
And I think this is the older I get, it's not so much about my next project or my next gig that I'm going to play, but it's more about what can I give to my students that's meaningful, that they can something they can take away and carry forward in their life. And that's why I feel really fortunate to be at a liberal arts college like Carleton, because we have some great students. Very few of them will be professional musicians, but some of the feedback I get from students, letters or emails, that thank you so much for teaching me this about music theory, or getting me through my senior recital or something like that, and very gratifying to get letters from alums that say, yeah, I'm still playing the tuba in the, you know, the Chatfield community band or something like
I
that.
Hear
it's really
that
great
from professors quite often, how gratifying it is. Well, not just, I mean, every kind of teacher, to hear from students later that they're still playing it, because it's one thing that you can do your whole life. You can bring it into your whole life in any capacity that you want.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. And that's what I tell my students. I wag my finger in their face and this is, you could do this for the rest of your life.
Exactly. Exactly. And it will bring joys in different ways.
Yeah.
I want to keep talking about this, but we need to turn to the next song called Vaudeville 1919, or was that the name of the show?
That was the name of the show.
Okay.
Yeah, this is what you're going to hear. This is my other, this was, to set it up, my interest in film music. I've taught film music classes at Carleton. And in researching, we always start chronologically. So we start with the silent films and the musical scores that accompanied silent films. And we go through the early sound film era in the 30s and then to the classic Hollywood cinema in the 40s and 50s and so on and so forth.
Oh, interesting.
But before the silent movies era, there was this vaudeville tradition, which were many vaudeville shows, local vaudeville shows, and we had one here actually I had two theaters here in Northfield, the Grand, of course, but there was also one called the Gem Theater, which was on Bridge Square, that had a little trio, a little group. But these vaudeville shows would have a pit orchestra, and like the Gem Theater had three people. It was a trio, a piano, a violin, and a percussionist. But so it depends on how much money the theater had. But in the very early days of motion pictures, they would, as part of the vaudeville show, and between the jugglers and the dog acts and the singers and the dancers and all that sort of thing, they would have a little film. They'd show a little film. And so I got interested in this in the vaudeville tradition and vis-a-vis through the film music. And so I got some Carleton faculty people together, and we started a little vaudeville group, which we call ourselves the North Star Cinema Orchestra.
That's great. I love it. That's right up my alley.
Right.
Love it.
And so I've researched some old pieces from the time of the period in which we are playing. And also it's jokes too. I've researched some old vaudeville jokes, and we put that all into our show. So it's a really fun show, which we do every now and then. And usually I pick 100 years before. So the last one we did was 2019. So I did 1919. So we did a film from 1919 and some music from that was popular at that era and so forth. So what you're going to hear is The Castle Walk, actually, which is composed by a African-American composer named James Reese Europe, who was a classically trained musician, but started playing in this sort of pop style. Remarkable. He had a jazz group. When World War I broke out, he took his jazz group. They all enlisted in the army, became a battalion of band, an all African-American band that played overseas. And then they would put down their instruments and pick up their rifles and fight. So it was quite amazing.
Yeah.
They were called the Hellcats because they were. And he's kind of viewed as the a proto-jazz composer, not quite jazz yet, but popular style. And he collaborated with Vern and Irene Castle, the dancing team. This was sort of before Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers, the generation before, which is also remarkable that an African-American would collaborate with a white dance couple. So that was very amazing at the time.
Absolutely.
But this is a piece called The Castle Walk. It's a two-step. It's kind of jazzy, but it's not quite jazz yet. But this is by the North Star Cinema Orchestra that I directed in 2019.
So. All right. Awesome. So let's see. This is by James Reese. James Reese Europe. Say that 10 times fast. James Reese Europe, performed by Carleton Ensemble, North Star Cinema Orchestra, directed by my guest, Ron Rodman.
Thank you.
This is Pauline Jennings, and you're listening to Musician Talk. Today, my guest, Ron Rodman, is music professor and symphony band director at Carleton, and you just heard a piece that he directed during his Vaudeville 1919 show. So you said this is a precursor to jazz. When I listen to it, I think ragtime. Almost. Mm-hmm. And yeah. So what's the difference, or where's the transition?
Reese, Europe was very influenced by Scott Joplin, who was the sort of the king of ragtime composers. So the ragtime era is really sort of from 1880 through about early 1900. So I think we're phasing into a different era at this time. It's all dance music. Ragtime was dance music too, but this is what they call two-step, which the rhythmic patterns are a little different. It doesn't have the stride piano sound that the ragtime has, you know, boom, chink, boom, bing, you know, that sort of thing. So it's a little bit different. So we're evolving into jazz from ragtime. So it is a link in between. It has some ragtime elements for sure.
So what was the next step after this transition?
Well, then it's big bands and and more of the sort of dance music, the Charleston and all that sort of thing. You know, that's in the 20s, so the flapper era, that kind of thing. So
interesting. And then we got many, many more steps before we get to bebop,
as the 1950s and so forth. Right.
All right. Well, thank you so much for sharing that with us. Mm-hmm. And it's time. That time of the show to talk about best gig, worst gig. And I want you to start with worst gig so that we could end on a high note.
Worst gig, as I think about this, my first job out of, as I mentioned it, from when I graduated from Indiana, I moved to Atlanta, and I taught at a private school in southwest corner of Atlanta, right by the Hartsfield Airport, which is now Atlanta International Airport. And I was hired as band director for grades 5 through high school. And the band program there had seen its day. They were great at one point, but then they sort of the numbers went downhill, and the former director got older. So by the time I got there, they hired me to build the band program, which as my first show, I had no idea how to do that. But I gave it my best shot. So the band was about 30 kids, and this was Georgia too, so big football state, mm-hmm. right? So we had to go out and march for football games at halftime and so forth. But so we had a pregame show where we marched the band out, play the national anthem, and then the school fight song, and then we march off, and then the football game starts. So I had my band, little 30 kids out there, just pointing to the stand, just maximize the sound. I had in formation, so they would get the maximum number of sound into the stands. And so we hear, and now please rise for our national anthem, so drum roll, and then bum, 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 bum. And then just as we started, an airplane took off from the airport. So they didn't hear the national anthem. Because the airplane was just, we were right under a flight path there. So I thought to myself, well, this is going to be a long career. But things got better after that.
That's good.
So anyway.
That's good. And after that plane went, they could hear you. Yeah. And so all's well that ends well, I guess.
Yeah.
Before you get to your good gig, I have a very, very important question for you. Do you have one of those jokes for us, the vaudeville jokes?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. Good. Yeah.
I'll tell you one. This is these are old jokes. So the one that comes to mind real quick. I'm talking to the singer, right? And I'm saying, well, Rick, I know that your singing has improved. And the singer says, yes, I used to get complaints from the apartment next door. Now they complain from the next block. So it's things like that, just these little corny jokes that are pretty, pretty funny.
We were just practicing at my house with some belter songs, and it's like, they probably could hear us down the block. Okay, so best gig.
Okay, well,
or one of your best.
Yeah,
picks.
I think I'm gonna cop out and do what all conductors do. You always say, "What is your best concert?" You say, "Well, the one I just finished." Mm-hmm. Right.
Yes,
so
I've heard that
it's
before.
Always the most recent one, right? Yep. So, but I think I look back and I think my imprint on at least at Carleton, because of my interest in film music, has been to have a theme to every concert and then add some either moving images or some pictures. And so we're lucky to have a really great sound and AV guy at Matthew Zimmerman.
I love him. Yeah. Know him.
And yeah, he's just wonderful.
Yes.
And he could put together a great visual package for a concert. So, I do a lot of concerts with multimedia, too, and so I would say those are always very satisfying. I did a concert, I think the one that started this was back in 1995, again, with World War II, a 50th anniversary of World War II, and this was before computer-aided technology and all that sort of thing, so I got together a lot of images, some and I had some English professors read poetry about World War II and history, people reading memoirs and sort of that sort of thing. And some reason this sort of resonated. We're not really, you know, Carleton's not really militaristic or anything like that, but this was, it kind of resonated with a lot of the campus. And so I kept doing it. I did a show on literary work, band pieces that are based on literary pieces, and I had some people read, you know, extracts from Moby Dick and things like that. And then I did Holst the Planets, and I had a astrophysics professor talk about, you know, the solar system a little bit. So those were all really great concerts.
Like,
I think
it's like we're on the same level. Yeah. I love all these ideas, these production ideas. That's great.
Yeah.
And thank you for being here and sharing this with us and telling us about your life, some of it anyway. And please, I'm serious about having you back to talk about either music and films or music and advertising, because I think those are both fascinating.
Yeah. Well, I'll be happy to come back. So thanks, Pauline. It's great to be
thank
here.
Thank you. All right. Bye-bye. All right. All right, so that's my first live show. We did it. Wendy, thank you. Thank you so much for your help. And many thanks to Ron for joining me today for this terrific walk down his musical path. My next live show will be Sandy Jensen on December 5th. A heartfelt thanks to you for listening to Musician Talk on the One KYMN.